This is Dojo Live, Tech Without Borders, stories that bring us together. Hello, and welcome to Dojo Live this Thursday, May 11th, 2023. My name is Kim Lantis, and it's my pleasure to be co-hosting along with America Guerrero today.
Hey.
Hi, America. Yes, and today's guest is Didi Das, who is the founding engineer of Glean. Didi, we're so excited to have you here on Dojo Live today.
I'm excited to be here with you, Kim and America. Nice to be here.
Yes. Thank you. I believe there's a bit of a delay here, so if I happen to speak over you, I do apologize in advance. But you know, this week has been a really interesting week. It's been a full week here on Dojo Live with three shows. Didi's wrapping up the week with the third show, and it's been an AI themed week. You know, AI machine learning for e-commerce. We talked about optimization versus the AI revolution, what those look like hand in hand. And today we're going to be talking about what people are trying and the difficulties they're experiencing with AI. But before we get into the AI topic, Didi, we'd love to get to know you, your story, kind of what you're passionate about. What's led up to your time with Glean?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking, Kim. So my story, depending on how far back you want me to go, is I was raised a little bit mixed between India and America. Eventually went to college in a high school in India, came to college in America. And I was always really, I grew up, you know, in the 90s, really passionate about tech. Tech was sort of my outlet into the world, you know, the internet, Google. And growing up, I always sort of wanted to work for Google. Google search was my window to the world. That was always kind of my dream. I did a couple of things in the middle and eventually landed up there working at Google search, where I was for 3.5-4 years. And it was really, really exciting to me being able to work on something that a billion people use all over the world. But it did seem like, you know, from a career standpoint, it felt like Google was a big place. There was a lot of good things going on. And I feel like, you know, they didn't really need me to function. They were pretty good on their own. And I wanted to go out and explore what it takes to build something from the ground up. And that's sort of when I started searching for opportunities and seeing what's out there. And I met Arvind in the process. And Arvind is a really, really senior ex-Googler who was one of the first, you know, distinguished engineers at Google. And he'd started a company called Rubrik before, and then he'd gone on to start something. He was just about to start this company at the time, not called Glean, it was called SEO.
Okay.
SEO. And I hopped up and I had a few conversations with him, and he had me convinced immediately that this was such a big and stark problem of people everywhere now work with their computers. They work on all these different apps and they have no idea where their stuff is. And you're like, is it in my mail? Is it in my messages? Who did I send this to? Where is that document? And that mission totally resonated with me. I wanted to build something that solves for that. And we had something like that at Google, but the world didn't. And that was kind of the motivation for me to come to Glean, where I've been an engineer now for 4 years, and I love it here. It's been
a
really
great. What a great story. I love that. I mean, it's interesting how our goals and life can shift. And once we experience something, it can help us determine what it is that we're really interested in. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. And your story about what Glean, the problem that you're solving, makes a lot of sense. Actually, I think a week, two, three ago, we spoke with Lori Stout of Big Leaf, and she was saying that individuals, I think each individual uses approximately 30-ish apps. And if you look at that across enterprise, it's like 200, 300 or something apps per company. And so I get where you're going with this. Let's talk a little bit about Glean. What exactly is the problem you're solving?
Yeah, absolutely. So you know how we all, like you said, we all use a bunch of apps in our consumer world. And typically there doesn't exist a good search engine for all of your consumer apps. We have Google to search the web. And that's a really big, powerful tool into learning more about whatever we have to learn about. You know, you hear something, this is commonplace, you search for it, you try to figure out what it is, and you have a little bit more context. At work, this doesn't really exist for a lot of people. When you're at a presentation and someone says, you know, hey, do you know, we're building out the stack for the TRI pipeline. You don't know what TRI is. You're a little afraid to ask. Maybe you should know, maybe you shouldn't. And that's sort of the premise of the idea for Glean. Can we take every single document that you have in your workplace, which might be in Slack, it might be in Mail, it might be Dropbox, you know, Salesforce, like you said, hundreds of apps at the workplace. And can we ingest all of those in a permission sensitive way? So you don't have access to anything you don't have access to, and then just give you a smart search box for you to say, hey, if you're looking for a document, just put in a couple of words that you think you remember and you'll find it. You want to learn more about something at the company that you heard, put it in and you'll find it. Acronym that you didn't know, put it in and you don't even need the doc, we'll show you. Search for your colleagues, who reports to who, who's working with who, what are they working on? Kind of that entire stack of foundational knowledge in the workplace that so many people have tried to build and not done a great job. That's the information organization challenge that Glean is sort of taking on. How do you solve that for every single knowledge worker out there? So they don't have to spend, this is what the data shows, 10 hours a week searching for what they need to do their job. They should spend most of their time doing their job, not looking
at it. Yeah, yes, precisely. And I think what's interesting with that too is like when I'm spending so much time searching for something, a lot of the times inevitably it means that I'm also using someone else's time because I'm messaging them, I'm asking. So it's not just my hour, two or three, it might be someone else's hour, two or three as well. So it's really interesting, which doesn't mean we shouldn't be interacting, right? Where there's, it's very, very important, I think, to have that camaraderie, that trust, and that human to human connection. But in terms of productivity, yeah, it can really kind of get in the way. So let's talk about today's topic specifically. America, what is DD chosen?
Yes, he chose how to build AI for enterprise. How will AI transform businesses? What are people trying and what are the difficulties? So please share with us the answer.
Well, this is a big, and I don't think I'll have an answer immediately, but let me
try to take a stab at it. You've got approximately 23 minutes, Dee Dee.
it's so crazy because when I sent in this topic, that was 2 months ago, and the state of the industry looks almost entirely different from what it does now. Things are changing so quickly on a daily basis. You know, Google came and announced 50 things yesterday, and that's changed things. And so it's a really hot space to be in. So many things are happening, and I'll try to give my best analysis of how people are thinking about it and how we should be thinking about it, given what I know today. And this might change in a month. So that's my forewarning, my disclaimer. So let me get started. So AI has sort of always been in the conversation in computer science. This is not new. Right, we've always talked about AI, digital transformation, smarter workplaces, cognitive this. It's always been a big popular topic of conversation in the workplace. But this year, something's different. And the thing that's different is we have this technology that people have been working on for the longest time called generative AI, which is basically was, let's predict, can we write like humans? That was sort of always the problem. When I was in college, we had a project on a technology called hidden Markov models, which kind of tried to do the same thing. Can you write like a human? But none of it would make sense. You know, it would sort of like seem like a human wrote it, but as you read it, you'll be like, yeah, this sentence just doesn't make sense. And now as those models have become more and more powerful, we throw the entire content of the internet at it and we say, hey, now can you generate text? And it turns out it feels like it can do it like a human can. And that has been one of the many transformative technologies of today that has reinvigorated the industry's need for AI. Because what that technology can do really transforms how we think about jobs, how we think about how many people we need at a company to run it. It has a lot of downstream consequences. And I'm just going to scratch the surface with a couple of quick examples, some of the more common ones. Customer support, this is a cost that almost every function, every company has to bear, you know, sure. Most companies consider it a cost. Yes, you want your support to be good, you want it to be great, but you know, how much money do you want to spend supporting, you know, millions and billions of users on your product? Probably not enough to break the bank. What you can do with large language models today is you can have a conversation with them and understand their needs and talk to them like a human could, even though it's not a human. So there's clearly tons of areas of cost saving to be had here. And that's just one example. There's so many areas of the workplace. How do sales people reach out to new customers? Before, they'd have to write their personalized email themselves. Now, if you look at some of the software out there that's been made by, you know, two people, it doesn't take a lot of people to even make this. You can just say, tell me everyone in California who works in technology, who has 10 years of experience, and send them a personalized email. It'll just do that for you. And so the power of this thing is gigantic. And I think all businesses are trying to figure out how to harness it. I'll end with saying, here's one of the things that Glean is building to try to harness that, and that I think is super valuable for the enterprise. We've already built this foundation of search. Now we thought, what if you could just talk to it like a human could? Why do you have to frame keywords and try to make this jump from things I need to know to what do I have to search for? You shouldn't need to say that. You should just be able to say, and this is stuff that we can do today, is show me things that Kim has sent me last week about the shows that I have to do. You know, just give me some notes and summarize them in 3 points. It'll do it for you. And so this is sort of, it gives you some examples of the power of AI in 2023 and what it means for the changing shape of businesses pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, so, I mean, go ahead, America.
Yeah, I'm thinking that this power that you mentioned gives you value, right, as a company. I'm wondering when is going to happen this? That is going to be kind of imply that you have AI, so you are faster as everybody else. Am I making sense? Because now every time that I see a company and they're selling, for example, a CRM, and they are saying that they are utilizing AI, blah, blah, blah. When that is going to happen, that everybody utilizes and is no longer to be a value for enterprises.
When will AI not be a buzzword?
Exactly.
Like, when are we not going to use this as a way to promote what we're doing? It's just going to be a given.
I'll be honest with you. Like, if I look at companies today, a lot of people are just riding the AI hype train, right? So they say, hey, I do AI. If they were building a CRM before, now it's an AI-powered CRM. Where is the AI?
It's like the organic label when you go to the grocery store.
Exactly. That's a really good analogy. And to some extent, like the organic label, no one knows what it means. No one knows where the AI is. But you know, you probably think if it has AI, it's better than not having AI. You know, and that's honestly with every hype cycle in technology, that's bound to happen. I think we saw similar things with cryptocurrencies. We're seeing similar things in AI. A lot of people are going to jump on this hype train and say, hey, we're building AI. Our product is AI powered, blah, 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 blah. That's going to happen. And in many cases, it's going to be somewhat fraudulent. Like, maybe they don't do anything with AI. Maybe they don't add any value, or maybe the value they add is not significant enough for you to think, wow, this is not revolutionary. You know, that is maybe 50 to 70% of all the cases. But I think that negative perception or that negative view shouldn't impact the fact that there are going to be drastic changes for the other 30 to 50%. And mm-hmm. there are going to be companies who, and it's already happening, who are changing how the internet and how technology functions. I'll give you one quick example, this is my favorite one. Ever since ChatGPT launched, you know, a lot of people have been using it. We all know it's quite powerful and it's quite cool. But one of the biggest stats that I find shocking is there's a website called Stack Overflow. And all engineers know what Stack Overflow is, because that you can't write code without, you know, using Stack Overflow, at least for some things you don't know. And the traffic at Stack Overflow, I think, dipped more than 15% since ChatGPT has launched, because the ability for these models to assimilate information from a variety of sources and just solve any coding problem you have in a conversational style is insane. And you can lean on that to understand that, you know, maybe there's some companies that are going to be a little scammy and may not do what they say they do, or say they do and then so something that they don't. But there are examples where it's clearly making a shift, a transformational shift in how people behave. And sure. We should focus on those positives, and it's so much there.
So if we want to take this like scammy organic food powered by AI metaphor a bit further, you know, one, the topic of conversation is the difficulties, right, that businesses are facing or may face in this transformation. And I'm thinking about like organic foods, right? There comes a point where regulation has to come into play, where it's like, hey, you can only put organic on your label, I don't know, the FDA or whatever, if it, you know, fills this and this checkbox and these types of things. How do you feel, or what do you think this is going to have a push in any type of regulation as far as AI is concerned? Is that something that businesses should be thinking about?
I think at this point, most businesses, unless you're selling an AI product as your primary business, and you're training a foundational model, for example, you shouldn't have to be concerned with the legal implications typically. I know that, say, ChatGPT or image generation software like Midjourney, or you know, code generation software like GitHub Copilot, some of these guys are concerned because there are accusations from people saying, hey, you know, you crawled all of the web and you used it for this thing that you're now selling as a service. Where's my money? You know, you can't use my content. Like, can you use my content without, is it fair use or not? Right? So if I wrote code on GitHub and I put it on GitHub, does that mean you can crawl it and train your model or not? If I published artwork, should you be able to regenerate things in my style of art or not? And each of these, I'm not a lawyer, but each of these legally mean a slightly different thing and they have different implications. However, as far as I know, using AI for most enterprise stuff, those are fairly, you don't have any of the legal risk. The provider usually has the legal risk. Mm-hmm. There. And just to build on that organic analogy, I think one way that the analogy cracks is it's not just companies who are selling AI. Every company, whether or not you're in technology, you also buy the organic or non-organic products. And when you're thinking about what food should I buy or what technology should I use to power my business, there are examples of in the industry where AI-based tools are allowing you to cut a lot of your workforce. And that's a really appealing thing to a lot of business leaders who just want to trim the fat. If there's a recession, you have too many people, you want your company to be profitable, sometimes you just have to cut costs. How do you do that? Well, hey, yeah, if I can get rid of 5,000 customer support agents and have software do it for me at a cheaper price, I'm probably as a business leader very excited at that opportunity. And so there is another conversation to be had about what does this mean for employment and businesses when actual jobs are being replaced, because already we see companies that are functioning with 50 to 70% less of their workforce and they seem to be all right.
Yeah. And I think that's a fair point for companies. So let's talk about that workforce, or like that half of the workforce that's no longer working. What can we do to sharpen our skills as individuals, do you think, in this new AI world? And does everybody need to become a software developer, a quality assurance engineer, or can I sharpen other skills as a way to maybe just take advantage of this in my own business? I mean, what's your take on that? What's going to happen in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
I think that it's really hard for me to speculate, but if I had to give you a prediction, I think one thing that everyone should be doing is keeping abreast of what AI tools exist. You want to be at the top of that S-curve of adoption, as they say in tech, where you know you start and then more people adopt it and then it sort of plateaus. You want to be at the very beginning where people are just learning about these tools. And just being there and just keeping informed about, hey, what can this do? How can I use it? For example, a lot of people in my circles have been saying, anytime I have a question, any question, whether it's for myself, for my colleague, for anything, I just go and ask ChatGPT first. And then I'm often very surprised at what it can do. And that makes me so much better at what I do at work, because I've already offloaded this huge mental task to software. So that's the first thing I'd advise, is you just go out and use tools and see what's happening. I don't everyone wants to be a software developer. I think for most people, you just need to be aware of what's happening and then figure out where you can put yourself and make it useful for your job. That's about all the advice I can really offer. It's hard to speculate where this will lead in.
For sure. For sure. And I think that's fair enough. Like, just the sense of awareness gives us power, right? It helps us prevent being hoodwinked or whatever else that might be. Let's go back to this conversational piece, like what you're utilizing at Glean and my ability to just ask a question. Do we still need to hone in these kind of prompt engineering skills, my ability to ask the right questions, or even like when talking about Google, right, earlier in today's show, like there are some skills when it comes to knowing how to use a search engine, right, in order to get the best, the accurate, the most trustworthy, reliable information. Is this something that you're also seeing in Glean or elsewhere? Like, how do you get the people using your product to ask the right questions to actually get to where they want to go and not just get frustrated at this stupid thing's not working when maybe I'm the problem?
Yeah, it's a really good question. One of the biggest problems with this technology is discoverability. People don't know how and what to ask. So neither do I. Like, I'm still discovering every day. This is very new. I try to keep abreast about it by reading as much as I can about what people are learning. And I think you're right. Like, that's the easiest way to keep up. Prompt engineering is a fancy word for knowing how to ask a question in English that this can understand. That's about all it is. It is both an important tool when developing applications now, as well as for just consumers who are using the software for whatever purpose they have to. So yeah, I think it's a really easy one to learn. It's kind of like learning how to Google, right? We all kind of picked it up when we figured it out. Like, hey, maybe not enter 10 words at a time and ask the entire question. Just two is fine, and it'll find out whatever you need to. And people are figuring out the exact opposite. So they have to kind of unlearn this behavior for large language models, where it's crazy how much detail you can go into and get much better answers. I'll give you one example that's more not work related. Is one of my friends wanted to watch a movie, and typically when we think about movie recommendations, we think about genres, right? Because that's the only thing, the access we've had before. Like, hey, I want to watch an action movie or a rom-com or something like that. But now what you can do is you can be as specific as you want. You can describe a plot of a movie that you just made up in your head and say, show me movies like this. And it will go and it'll find those movies. So maybe he wouldn't call it prompt engineering, but just wiring your head to be able to say, hey, guess what? I can actually do this now. And most people don't know that this is possible. That effect will snowball and you'll learn that you can do so much more with your time and saved time.
Interesting.
And talking about unlearning behaviors, something that I want to share is that I'm still studying my university degree, okay? So something that my teachers always tell me, and since ChatGPT started and everything, that we shouldn't invest our time using those tools because it's like we're not using our brain. So that's what I have been learning from them, but not learning, hearing. And what would you recommend?
They're just saying, don't be a cheater.
And I totally understand it. But now the real life is saying that with this technology, we can enable things, right? What would you tell to those students who are just like feeling guilty to start utilizing this, or maybe this could give you more value in the real world? Or what is your opinion on that?
Well, I think when I've heard this conversation so many times about, hey, ChatGPT for students and how it's so different, but I actually think about it and it doesn't feel so different from Google back in the day. It's just that we didn't have mobile and access all that easy back when Google came out, but it wasn't different. Teachers would say the same thing about Google, like, hey, don't just Google for stuff, actually study. And over time, you know, the shift was, it turns out you don't have to remember basic facts and dates and stupid stuff anymore, right? Like, we all kind of just came to the conclusion that remembering inner details or intricate details about things is not the important part. Learning how to think about them is the important part. And taking that analogy to what ChatGPT offers, I think it just shifts the dial. I mean, I think your teachers are right in some way. If you only use Google and then copy paste it to your assignments, yeah, you're not going to learn anything. But, and same with ChatGPT, if you only use it and just copy paste an answer, you're probably not going to learn anything. But how do you leverage it as a tool to get back information? And then what is the human add? I guess the question I always ask is, what value do we add that the technology doesn't have? And our value is our understanding of the world and assimilating information and translating that and being able to tell, hey, actually, this thing that ChatGPT wrote, that doesn't make any sense. That's the skill that we need to have. And so I don't think those things are a little orthogonal. You can keep using the technology, get better at the technology, learn how to leverage it. And that actually makes your mind more resilient to understanding what's good, what's bad, what's fake, what's not. How does this work? 90% of the time, it's true. 10% of the time, just spits out garbage. It's not actually even true. And just learning, using the technology helps you learn that. That's what tunes your brain to understand mm-hmm. how the technology works. Not using it does not leave you in a better place. No one who didn't use Google turned out better in the last 20 years.
That is true.
You know? So that's kind of how I would approach it. Everyone likes to reject the tool at first, but you know, you should embrace it and see how it serves you.
Yeah, and I think that's important. And I think at least my understanding as things stand right now, a lot of this artificial intelligence or this, you know, my gosh, I'm having a brain fart with this word. The AI that's, oh my God, you mentioned the word earlier. The AI that's now creating content, it has a specific name.
Generative AI?
Generative, thank you. Oh my God. It's still getting its ideas from people's ideas, right? It's still this collection of knowledge that has already been thought about, already been discussed, already been thought through. And I think to your point, Didi, it's important to step back and be like, I agree, I disagree. Why do I agree? Why do I disagree? Particularly when it's coming to things that aren't 1 + 1 = 2, right? I mean, if we're talking about the plot of a movie, what does it mean? What did Ernest Hemingway mean in this particular novel or poem? Like, AI is not, I mean, they might give you an idea, but you can be like, it can send you down this path of thought, but ultimately we're still coming back to our humanity.
And it's actually interesting that you mentioned the math example, because that's actually the simplest example to gauge, because ChatGPT turns out to be pretty bad at math. If you ask it basic math stuff, it often gets it wrong. And it kind of goes to, and it's also non-deterministic. So sometimes if you ask it the same question, it'll give you different answers. Some of them might be wrong, some of them might be right. And just getting a sense of that's how the technology works already makes you a better user of the tool. All tools aren't built the same, and this one is like rolling dice sometimes. You know, sometimes you get a great answer, sometimes you don't. And it's important to understand that because we've not had probabilistic tools really in the past. And Google, if I search something, I tell you to search it, you get the same thing I get. You know, and that's mostly the same thing. That's a very different kind of way to use tools. That's true of every single internet product we have right now, almost. And then you have this thing, which is I ask it the same question that you do, gives me one answer, gives you one answer, and I ask it again, yeah. Give me
maybe
another
if
answer.
It enters in panic, like, oh God, it keeps asking me. I need to figure something out. Yes, it's perfect. And I think this brings me to the final question. And particularly coming back to Glean, the company where you're able to pull all this information from all these different sources, present it to the user. And my question for this is reliability. You know, how, like when it comes to using a tool like yours as an individual, as a company, can I rely on what I'm given? What are the steps that maybe that we have to take as individuals to make sure that this is in fact the most recent update of a certain document or whatever that might be? How are you solving that problem?
So from a product perspective, the way we're thinking about it is very simple. Like let's say you ask a question about the workplace and we show you an answer. So envision something like ChatGPT, but in addition to that, we're also going to show you, hey, these are the documents it came from. In fact, here is where in the document that we used to generate that answer. So we try to ground the final answer in authentic data instead of not giving you any sense of attribution. And that's really key for users to build trust in the product. it is true that all the, sometimes it's still going to be a little off, but it's much, much easier. It's much more likely to be not off. And when you do see it a little off, you can see the attribution. You can see which document it came from. You can see if it was updated today or was it the document from 3 years ago that I don't really care about. And in fact, you can even say, hey, actually, I don't want this document. So give me another answer that doesn't use this. And then it'll do that for you. So the amount of control we're trying to build into the experience from a product perspective, we believe that's the key to understand, to better use this product. Like, we need more levers, not less. Right now, it's a very blunt tool for consumers, right? You ask it text, it gives you text. There's not much else you can do. What if you could actually say, you know, tell me what documents to use, tag a person, say, hey, America, I want to see things that she has done about this topic. You can do that. It understands who she is, everything in your company. And the grounding the answer in real information, I think, is very key to enabling trust and to enabling people to actually use for real work tasks. And that's what we've
Yeah. Done. And it's going back to the basics that we all kind of know, to America's point, you know, and university professors and whatever else. And we have to do bibliographies, right? That's the biggest question. Source this. Where did you get this information from? And I see that that's what essentially what Glean is also doing, right, as they're mm-hmm. presenting. Perfect. You know, we've actually come to the end of our half hour today already, Didi, if you can imagine that. It was a great conversation, a lot of really interesting ideas, words of wisdom, great story of your own, a great adventure, and of course, a really cool product that Glean is building for businesses and enterprise in this AI revolution. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Kim and America. I had a great time.
Thank you. Stick around for just a minute as we go off air. But before we do, I'd like to remind our viewers that you can catch us on Monday for our recap show, where we give you our thoughts and ideas of this week's three shows. And of course, we'll introduce what we've got coming up next week as well. That's at 10 o'clock Pacific right here on Dojo Live. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye for now.
Check out past episodes, transcripts, blogs, and more on our website, dojo.nearsoft.com.